outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gene. The God Gene. The God Gene.
It's fall in Southern California. You know how I know? There's one tree in my neighborhood turning color, and it's right underneath three palm trees. It's just sad. It's so sad. Fall in California. But what's glorious is this is a nice, cool day in Southern California. Sun's out. It's beautiful. And I got two friends here with me who've come out from, well, one's not from too far away, a couple hours down the road, Bob Prater from Bakersfield, California. Hello, Bob.
Well, hello, Wayne. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and then Arnita Taylor is here from the beautiful DFW area of Texas. Hello, Arnita.
You're being facetious. It's not beautiful. But hello, good morning. How are you?
Oh, we had this talk earlier, didn't we?
Really?
Usually the first thing out of my mouth is a joke. It's just kind of like not really true.
Yeah.
It should be absurd enough that everybody knows it's not true. But I'm finding with you, Arnita.
I'm a very literal, analytical person.
It's not always absurd enough so that you know, hey, that's not true.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm from Middle Tennessee where the trees are beautiful.
Yeah, well,
and
no,
DFW
I know that.
Just kinda,
no. All right, so hold on. Let me.
No, fall is not beautiful in Southern California.
It's not. It's not.
In Central California,
a little
it's
bit.
Not bad. It's got some
it's
color.
It's late.
Palm trees don't change color. That's
no,
and
they,
oak trees
no.
don't either. Somebody gave me a card with this beautiful oak tree. It's all
it's
red.
So neat. Yeah.
The card?
Your card.
Isn't that card amazing?
It's amazing.
But you know what? Oak trees don't turn orange, red, or yellow. They just go from green to brown.
Just, and done.
It's just sad. California. And I live in Thousand Oaks, so that's our dirty brown winter, you know? There's 999.
Anyway,
they're down here because, well, we're launching the book. We did it last week in Dallas, and we can talk about that for a minute. How'd that go for y'all?
Great. It was great to have so many friends and people come out and support us and meet you guys, and it was amazing.
Yeah, a lot of new friends. And, man, it was a kick. Good events in Dallas. You're wrong about whether or not Dallas was beautiful. Although
it's because you were at my house.
Although,
we're talking restaurants. We're not talking.
No, I think the city itself is beautiful.
The city. You were downtown the city.
I really like it. Although
you saw Love Field, Arnita's house, and a couple of institutions.
I was a little bit stunned by all of the grass being brown.
Oh my!
We live in California, Wayne.
One more time, you're wasting
valuable
time.
Sing the song. Just go ahead and sing the song.
All the grass is brown.
Oh my, y'all! We had to hear it all weekend.
We heard it 13 times in a 5-minute road trip. Just painful. So we're actually.
It hurt me. All the grass was brown.
Actually, we're thinking about kicking Bob off this team. But we haven't figured out how to get his name off the first 10,000 books that are out there.
Yeah,
you just
they're
can't
already
do that.
Out.
Yeah, second printing, maybe you can.
So anyway, we did a 6-hour pop-up seminar for some people. Delightful time. Had lunch all together, but that took longer than we hoped. So that was
still
fun. But it was delicious.
It was fun conversation. Then we had an evening in someone's home that wanted to explore some Wayne Jacobson stuff.
Oh, that was fun.
And Bob sat in the back, heckled me. I had to call him out a couple times just to keep it nice.
You heckled me.
And you really
I heckled you. You called me out.
And Sunday we had two launch events. Lots of people came in, got some books, got some autographs. We talked about the story, which we've already talked about in the podcast. You can go back and hear some of that if you want to hear it here.
Yep.
But what did anything you on your hearts from our weekend in Texas?
The genuine desire of people to literally just be better and speak better with one another. There was a literal desire. And I found it interesting. Arnita, your husband Mike, talked about crave items at restaurants.
Yeah.
That was phenomenal to me as he talked about he started naming restaurants. What do you think their crave item is? The thing that makes your mouth water when you think about them or drive by. And with McDonald's, he said it's those fries. We all love McDonald's fries and the sauce on the Big Mac. That's the money for them. And so our desire was to make this a crave item for people, to make it so attractive, to make it taste so good that they just want to share it with others. And I'll tell you what, that felt successful to me in Dallas as people were genuinely wanting to speak a new language.
And by the way, Mike is a master restaurateur.
Oh, is he ever?
Yeah,
that's my baby.
It's not
thing.
Just he doesn't have a little interest in restaurants, man.
No
yeah.
way.
He launches them. he launches
high level.
Restaurants. Unlike we launch books, we do one a decade. He does restaurants all the time.
all the time.
So but, fun. I got 4-mile walks with Michael every morning, so that was awesome.
That was good. I'm glad y'all enjoy the walk.
I did.
His wife abandoned him, and you picked up the slack. Thank you, Wayne Jacobson.
I didn't. He didn't feel abandoned. I never heard that this was your walk that I took your place. I never heard
you didn't take my place. I just kind of abandoned him months ago.
Months ago.
Not for the few days you were here.
Well,
there.
The dark side of a language of healing.
I tell you what, it is easier to walk 4 miles with a Mike or a Harvey like I did in Ohio than it is to walk 4 miles alone. It just takes twice as long.
Yeah.
Even though it's the same time frame, when you're talking, all of a sudden, oh, we're done? Oh, my gosh, it's over. Yeah.
Well, you know, Bob, along the crave line
right.
that you were talking about, we do hope that people will crave to go toward people who are different than them as a result right. of reading the book. The reviews have been great, and everybody said, you know, it's an easy read. And we understand that that means layout and stuff. But it's going to be a little bit purposeful when you start going really toward people who are different than you and craving that,
yeah.
making that a part of your routine and habit every day as we do life.
And what I loved is the people who are part of this, and some of them because they have a relationship with one of us. So they want to be about the book. They want to be supportive, but come from backgrounds in which speaking the language of healing wouldn't necessarily be easy for them or enjoyable. I don't think it's easy for any of us. We've talked
right.
about that.
Ooh.
It's a challenge. But watch people struggle to think about how I can do this in very practical ways. I love that because it's like, man, I don't think our book was to move people into the goalposts. It was
right.
if we can move you 5 yards further downfield,
yes.
you know,
yes.
just to be open in a different way to people,
yeah.
that would be a win.
Big win.
But to watch people struggle with that I know given their background, this is not easy for them to even contemplate. And then to ask the question that really points to the hard thing in their life to get over. I think it's just, I love how people have processed it so deeply. Anyway, you guys are out here because people have been bugging us who I guess don't read anymore. They want us to read it to them. So we decided we got to come out for the launch events anyway. Arnita came out early. Bob came down early. And we've spent the last 2 days recording the book.
Yeah.
That has been fun because I haven't read it in a while. It was fun to read the book.
Yeah, I was surprised at some of the things that were in there, and I thought, oh my, this is a little controversial, isn't it?
And I'm thinking, wow, this is good.
Oh.
This is such a good read. So
that's what I was thinking. Did you say that really?
Did I really say that?
Yeah.
Man, that's good stuff right there. So,
and I've never heard an audiobook, though I don't listen to many, but that has three
either.
Voices in it. And so we each read our own parts of the book. And so there's alternating dialogue that I found fascinating just to listen to while we recorded it.
Yeah, me too. And, you know, there's this whole little tribe, not a little tribe. Mm-hmm. There's a big tribe of people who listen to audiobooks. And so.
Oh, yeah, that is a growing tribe.
It's a growing tribe.
Sure
you
is.
Know, and to use our own words from the book.
So at the end of this podcast, we're going to play you chapter one just so you can hear it. We won't be available probably for, I don't know, six, eight weeks. I don't know. It'll take a while to get all the production done on it. But it'll be out there, and it'll be available at some point. But we'll play a little for you so you can listen. But just walking through that experience with you guys, and a lot of humor, again, you know, with chicken sandwiches and things that just, you know, you see those outtakes. Sorry, Nita just lost.
If only we could put a blooper reel in at the end of the audiobook. That chicken sandwich stuff was crazy.
I hit pause button for a lot of what went on between until we got back to recording. But yeah,
it's because he couldn't stop laughing at some.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you see in sitcoms where they get so tickled they go right and try and reshoot the scene, and you can't even get the first word out, and you're laughing again. So that was fun.
Yeah, that was a lost 3 hours. Something like that.
You have a tendency to exaggerate, Robert.
I might.
In so many ways.
Maybe.
Extras.
So then we've got a couple
that.
Of launch events. We got one today. We're going out to Life Pacific University and
yep.
do a bit out there. And then we're going tomorrow to a group Arnita knows a little about or not much about, but we've been invited to Culture Brave here in Los Angeles area, which is a group talking about racial issues and racial things.
Yeah, they're a group that all of their meetings center around conversations around different topics, but race is certainly one of them. And they are gracious enough to bring us in so that we can talk about our book and how we feel that we can help people have better conversations. So it's a really good fit for us. Lisa Vitella is the leader of that group.
Great.
And we're excited to meet them tomorrow in downtown LA.
We are. And it's interesting because when Bob and I first started talking about this book, we weren't even going to talk about race. Partly because we had three white people going to work on it. So
right.
it was about politics. It was about those issues. And because God allowed us to find Arnita in this process. It opened up that area too, which is as applicable as any of the others to the divisions in our culture, and maybe worse so for lots of reasons.
Would agree.
Yeah.
Agree. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it was a gift.
Thank you.
It
for
was
having
a
me.
Gift when you came into this, Arnita.
Thank you.
This really would be it would be a far different read.
And you know, the interesting part of that, we are urging people to go have their own conversations. So everybody's conversation is going to be different. You're correct. One change, one variable change, and the whole conversation changes. And so we want people to know that as they read the book, this is our conversation.
Right.
But when you go have your own conversations, take some of those principles and things we say, but your conversation with your other two or three or four people will be different. And that's okay. That's really a win for us.
What I really like is we talk in the book, and people may not know this about you, but you are a trained scientist, a chemist. So we talk a little bit about the catalytic effect of different elements coming together and what happens when two things come together. We saw the effect of three completely separate people putting their thoughts into a pile, and something brand new came about. It was just an amazing thing to see something brand new created from three different people.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And how much humility in that helps, you know, like just say for us to have written a book, even with the person we had talked about having first, who's a politically engaged white woman, we could get into gender stuff with her, political stuff with her.
Mm-hmm.
But for three white people to pontificate about race is absolutely senseless. And I have been in those conversations. I've been in conversation with all white people in the conversation pontificating what blacks should do to get along better with the culture. And I find that now just ridiculous. What are
it
we even
ridiculous.
Talking about? Yes, it is. But
well,
very
here's
ridiculous.
The crazy thing. If we had gone down that path, Wayne, we probably would have taken a swing at it anyway in our ignorance. And I would not do that in a million years after this experience.
It's hard to say what we would have done with it, but it wasn't on the list of things that we would have taken with great depth, but it's certainly one of the polarized elements of our culture.
And one of the things that we know as authors is that I do think groups talk about race with themselves.
Yes.
We're wanting you to talk about race with other people.
Right.
That's part of a language of healing, to have enough courage to take a step to say, hey, let's sit down and help me understand a little bit more from your lens, from your perspective.
Yeah, so how you see it.
We want that to happen.
And people are listening to this for the first time going, what book are they talking about? We've never even mentioned the title. It's A Language of Healing for a Polarized Nation. And we're just assuming everybody's in this conversation because I've been talking about it.
Yeah, because it's been out five whole days.
Yeah, it's been out five whole days. We found out Barnes & Noble doesn't even have them in stock yet because they haven't figured out how
to. Been out 5 whole days.
They have them in their warehouse, but somehow haven't gotten to their stores. So we're working through all that because this is a late dropped book. We didn't go through the normal channels of publishing where you have to announce it for a year, advertise it for a year,
right.
Sit around. We were done with it and we decided we wanted to get it out before the election year. So we rushed it out to November before it got lost in all the holiday days stuff. But anyway, it's A Language of Healing for a Polarized Nation. Bob Prater, Wayne Jacobson, Arnita Willis Taylor are the authors, and that's who we're talking to here in this podcast. So now, those of you who weren't up to speed are up to speed.
Hey, interesting side note, and I don't want to get into any specifics at all because that's not really helpful, but we wrote this book, and I'm telling you, my understanding is light years ahead of where it used to be, but in the last week, Arnita and I have sat down, and we've had some conversations that have still been difficult. So even though where you know, I say something or she says something and one or the other of us just looks at the other like, you've got three heads right now.
You can't say that.
No. It's and listen, not only have we read the book, we wrote the book. And we're still trying to find our way forward and trying to figure stuff out. So this is not always an easy path. I mean, people are saying it's an easy read, but they...
And I think it is. It is an easy read.
It is.
In terms of its story, its changing voices, it's very simply laying out a pathway for people. But taking that pathway
there it is.
Will challenge everything in your being. It's going to be, and I think the book, like you talk about, have these conversations. And even if the conversation starts with the book, where you can invite some people over, mixed race situation, mixed political environment, mixed whatever.
Come on.
And sit down and say, let's read this chat. Let's talk about it with the idea to understand, not scream into the echo chamber, which we seem to all do within our own clubs. One of the things in the seminar for me that I reawakened to from some of my old bridge builders days was the conversation I have with my in-group to move them toward common ground is very different than my conversation with the out-group to invite them to common ground. And if we have the same rhetoric without an awareness of who we're in a conversation with, that's where misunderstanding and hurt and offense is just...
It's just waiting to happen.
Yeah,
yeah, that's just really a situation of it waiting to happen.
Yeah.
So, yeah. We're excited to share with the world, really.
Bob, you were looking at a review today on Amazon. It's actually somebody I know wrote this review, but not a close friend, someone I went to college with a long time ago. We were going to read a bad one too, but we haven't got a bad one yet. So if you want to write a bad one, we'll give it equal time somewhere. But
hey, please don't be the first bad review if you're listening.
I think what we loved about this review, and there's a bunch of them now on Amazon. I mean, there's already a bunch of people getting going there, but this kind is the thing we hope this book would do.
Yeah.
I think that's
exactly.
Why we.
All right. So this just came in. Okay. It's from Jeff. And it says, wow, what a relevant book. I am almost through reading this insightful book and have found it to be so helpful and encouraging in my life journey. There is a lot to digest and absorb into my thinking. Like a saber, it cuts through all the fog and reveals many truths as to why we have a polarized nation. Each contributing author adds to this project in their own unique way. The crawl, walk, and run challenges are great motivators, opening our thinking to new life scenarios. I was personally encouraged by the life stories of the authors to see just how going with the crowd can hurt others. This is definitely one book that I will want to read many times. There are just so many truth gems packed away throughout the pages. I have to read it slowly and let it all sink in.
Yeah, Jeff,
love
thank
that.
You, man.
Thank you, Jeff.
It's a good one.
Thank you, Jeff.
What a neat review. And that's what we're hoping. We're hoping it kind of gives people, someone said to you, Bob, early on, one of the early readers, just it kept me awake all night and gave me something new to think about on every page.
Yeah.
Yeah, he said, you owe me a night's sleep.
If we can get people to rethink and reengage and think differently about the conversations they're having and even open the door to some new ones, like we said in the first chapter, it's a win.
Yeah, and I want to encourage everyone. The crawl, walk, and run steps, please, please, please try at least the crawl.
Mm-hmm.
We understand that they are not easy. My son read them and said, oh my goodness, Mom, those are hard. Did you have anything to do with that? I was like, just a little bit.
Just
so
a little.
We know that some of those will
yeah,
be very
her.
Challenging for you, but please take at least one step. I promise you, if you will do one step at the end of each of those chapters, your life will change and your perspective will change. So we know that they're not easy, but we want you to try them anyway. Be brave and courageous.
You also have to slow down because if you read the whole thing in 2 days and you have 15 crawl, walk, run things to try and do.
Take your time.
And if you are reading it more quickly, jot down one you'd like to try for a week or two, and then another one you'd try after that, and another one. Don't try to just jump into it because you'll wear you out and you won't continue. These are baby steps. This is incrementally grow in letting God expand your heart to include other people and then to not just think my perspective is the perspective everyone else needs, but to help other people's perspectives come out and shape and change you. And that's part of what you were talking about, Bob. We continue in being together for a few days. We continue to shape each other's perspectives. And
it's true.
And I don't mean aggressively trying to change each other because that doesn't work. But by talking honestly about things, it just opens your heart to the possibility of change, to maybe I'll see this differently.
That's exactly right. Okay. And, you know, as people step into that crawl, walk, run, we all have a tendency to insulate ourselves with a bubble. And our reality is our reality, and where we're comfortable is where we're comfortable. This is really a call to step outside of that bubble, outside of that comfort zone, and begin to experience life that maybe has been a little bit scary to you. There's a chapter in the book called What's in It for Me? And you're going to find that there's an awful lot in there for you when you step outside that bubble.
Let's go back to the craving thing you talked about.
Yep.
Yeah, I hope when people read it, I know when I do, when I listen to you guys read it, and we went through it again, it makes you crave for a different kind of connection with people. It's not, oh yeah, I should do this. I should probably work hard for my culture. I really do think it gives you, man, I want to be part of it. The chapter you just referred to, it broadens my horizon. It sets a different legacy in my family. It does things that, that are of great benefit to us, not just the other folks we're inviting into that, benefiting them.
You know what's crazy is to put it in a different cultural term than I normally would, I considered myself pretty woke.
Oh,
all right?
Wow.
Listen to me. I did. And
Bob is awoke, y'all. He's
listen
woke.
To me. Listen to me.
I don't even like the term.
I'm doing a podcast with a Muslim. I do these things and I sit with people who are different. And yet, this was the most challenging experience of my life. And a dear friend of mine for 20 years, just before we left last week for Dallas, called me on the phone and he said, Bob, I just need to tell you, this process for you has changed you. I have seen a palpable difference in the way that you operate. And there could not be a higher compliment given to me. I really thought I had a tiger by the tail before. And yet,
until he met me.
Well, my gosh, just yesterday morning we were sitting and talking and here it goes. And so, I like that.
That's good. You know, another thing I want to add is we still have our website, alanguageofhealing.com. We'd love to hear from you on the website as well, so that we can know how we can better prepare to address your questions and answers at a later date. But we want to hear from you. What is jarring in your mind and what is being tapped in your paradigms as you read? We'd love to hear that as the author. So
we would love to help nurture those kinds of conversations. So if you've got questions about how do I do this or whatever, or want us to come out and be part of something you've got going, I think that was part of the class in Dallas, was to open the door to say we could do some things that are helpful to people, give them extra tools.
Sure.
And that's how most people showed up. I want more tools in my tool belt. That was a great comment from a lot of people.
Exactly.
Great. Thanks everybody for all your support. And we hope that you will share this. We price the book so that you can buy bunches of them and share them. You know, we want you to do that. Gift them to someone this season.
Yeah, we were going to do the hardback version, but knew that wouldn't make it accessible to as many people. So we went straight to paperback, which they'll say, don't do that. It's stupid.
Yep.
But we do stupid. That's our biggest deal.
We're different.
Go against the grain. That's what we do.
We're different.
So it's kind of early morning here. So if we sounded asleep, that might be why. We've got to get on the road to do some other things today. So we're going to leave you with the first chapter from A Language of Healing for a Polarized Nation, as read by Wayne Jacobson,
Arnita Willis-Taylor,
and Bob Prater. Chapter 1, A Fork in the Road. Are you tired of all the animosity in our national dialogue? Are you sick of every mention of religion or politics among family and friends that leaves you divided and angry? Have you had enough of social media exchanges that divide us into two hostile camps on every issue, with each side's proposed solution so completely exaggerated as to be unrealistic? We hope you are. So are we. We are three regular Americans who are convinced that our current course is not only paralyzing our national dialogue, but also destroying our social fabric. We're looking for others who want to change the conversation from the rhetoric of polarization to a language of healing, where honest differences don't have to destroy relationships, and where we can find common ground through mutual respect and compassion.
We can't sell this book. The publishing executive shook his head at me like I should have known better. It was 2003, and I was pitching a book called When Worldviews Collide, which dealt with cultural conflicts, primarily in our national political dialogue. Books on peacemaking don't sell, he continued, but if you will choose a side in the fight and vilify the other, we can move that book. Remember, this was the heyday of Rush Limbaugh, Michael Moore, and Bill O'Reilly, and their diatribes against political enemies were overwhelming bestsellers. Animosity sells well. It always has. That book never got published. Almost two decades later, we approach a critical fork in the road in our national dialogue. Will we continue to degenerate into a cacophony of angry voices unable to legislate or negotiate with one another? Or will we find a different language that allows us to cultivate avenues of cooperation beyond our deepest differences? I'm hopeful the tide has turned. Most people I talk to are tired of the paralysis and polarization of our divisive national politic and how that has filtered into the inability of friends and family to discuss important issues without angry and bitter feelings.
We've lost our sense of decency. We've misplaced what what's reasonable in our conversations with others in hopes of forcing them to see it our way. What defines the language of healing is a sense of fairness and compassion, especially where people disagree.
Reasonable is a great word. It means we can reason together, looking for the best way to solve our mutual concerns. That's at the heart of peacemaking. The word itself sets up a dichotomy. It starts with peace, which suggests passive tranquility, but that peace has to be of our making, which is active. We won't find peace if we don't take action. The peacemaker has to be on the offensive. My definition of peace may not be the same as someone whose experiences have been different than mine, whether those differences are along racial, gender, geographic, or religious lines.
Making peace doesn't mean we all make nice and get along perfectly. The language of healing doesn't require us to always agree. It simply opens a door to communicate graciously and find solutions that are fair for all of us. Our nation's highest hopes are not built on a shared worldview, but on mutual respect for our differing views as we build an environment where they won't divide us. By speaking a different language, you will have the ability to explore, discover, listen, learn, and grow with an appreciation for views unlike our own. This language can help you embrace the rich tapestry of humanity and find a way to enjoy others, even beyond our disagreements.
It reverses our tribal instincts, doesn't it? I am dismayed when people are so quick to fall into lockstep with charismatic leaders of any political or religious stripe who have developed an uncanny ability to build their power by vilifying others. Nothing seems to unite us like a common enemy. I didn't think that I'd ever see people who identify as spiritual blindly entering the fray saying, whatever it takes to get our way, we're willing to go along. Yet that is the reality, as phrases like just shut up and sing have morphed into just shut up. I was recently instructed by a friend to stay in my lane as a white man and stop talking about racial injustice in society. Trust me, it wasn't the first time I heard that. It won't be the last.
That's the power of groupthink. Few people are brave enough or have been encouraged enough to stand up for their beliefs, especially when it doesn't go along with the social majority in their own group. It takes a strong person to stand against that kind of influence. I'm surprised you two would invite me into this conversation.
In my experience, it has been difficult to get conservatives like me to the table. Many have seen themselves as the majority voice for so long that they see many recent changes in society as a sign of their failure. I worked for 25 years with Bridge Builders, a mediation and consulting service that helped bring diverse people together to cultivate the common ground. I was involved with school districts, local governments, and businesses in various forms of crisis. Those who were convinced of their own rightness were the hardest to bring to the table. So how do we move together as a society if we can't stake out a common ground from which we can negotiate those differences? I have found that a vast majority of people are reasonable enough to have the conversation we're suggesting. The problem is the microphones are in the hands of those who are on the extremes, who have something to gain from exacerbating the conflict rather than resolving it.
Learning a new language. In my lifetime, the language of animosity has become an art form. I hadn't heard the term fake news before 2015. Today it's everywhere. Those two simple words have become a way of dismissing anything we find uncomfortable, and it also keeps us in a constant stalemate. Forward movement becomes impossible. I am finding great value in speaking and writing through the filter of a different language, and a richer life spending time with people where that language is well spoken.
We all identify with the groups we grew up in, or the one you've come to believe in. It's natural to see outsiders as threatening to our preferred way of life. The language of animosity is filled with fear and suspicion, and when we don't get our way, we react with anger. The language of healing makes room for those differences, without that fear. It's not just civility for civility's sake. It is a genuine awareness that my group doesn't have all the wisdom, nor will it alone create the environment in which others can flourish. Those who have different experiences and cultures will have ideas that can benefit us if we choose to be exposed to them.
For that, we need a new language, one void of judgment and animosity. If I want to go to Paris someday, wouldn't it enhance my experience if I spoke their language? Not only could I easily navigate the city, my interactions with others would broaden. What if we learned a different way to communicate that opened new doors to understanding one another? If you're looking for more capacity in your personal life, learning another language will help accomplish that. When I learned French, the process of conjugating verbs and learning sight words was difficult. It took time, but I learned to appreciate the process.
In 2012, the Swedish Army conducted a study with MRI scans taken before and after the exercise of learning a new language. After an intense, concentrated course designed to shorten the time ordinarily needed to become proficient in a new language, scans revealed that the areas of the brain associated with learning had actually grown in size. Learning a language increased the mental capacity for all learning and may help the brain resist dementia. I've enjoyed learning this new language. Others around me were more proficient at it. It takes practice. Don't be afraid to make mistakes and have fun when you do. I started out using it intentionally, and eventually it has become second nature.
Proximity is pivotal. Although there is beauty in different and new, it's not always comfortable. For most of my life, I had been immersed in church experiences that can best be termed as all black or majority black. I can remember the first time being in a white church. I found myself frustrated and in tears as I realized that I knew none of the worship music. Not one song was familiar, and for someone who loves to sing, it was intensely bewildering. I chose to stay anyway, and during my time there, I met many wonderful people and even got to share my gifts, including singing. I would have missed all of that if I'd given in to my discomfort and never returned. Trying something new can be lonely or even painful, but the growth I've experienced has been worth the process.
One of my dearest friends is a Muslim, and for years, he was the only practicing emir in the entire United States. That means he was the legal and spiritual head of thousands of Muslims in our area. Our relationship began with a very contentious interview that I conducted for our local newspaper. Afterward, he was less than happy, but I managed to say something that made him laugh. So I took a chance and invited him to breakfast. Why in the world would I want to do that? It was a contentious interview, so his answer wasn't a surprise. Even so, I smiled and said, "You should have breakfast with me simply because you should." He smiled and sighed as we exchanged numbers. The first few minutes of our first breakfast began with religion, but I was certain that would lead to a dead end. "Did you go to school?" I asked. He replied that he had attended the University of Southern California and studied Islam with some of the top clerics in the world. I told him that I knew a few things as well, even though my education was from a denominational school called Life Bible College. I then made a request. "Tell me your story. Start at the beginning and don't leave anything out." More than 3 hours later, I learned that he moved to Bakersfield, California at the age of 5. I found out that his father had been involved in the Ministry of Trade in Kuwait. He told me the story of his dad's life being saved by Muhammad Ali, literally. And I heard what it was like to grow up as a Muslim in Kern County, California's most conservative area. We found how much we had in common. We both loved our families. We both loved God. And we both had a passion for football. At the end, Ahmad said, "I recently sat with a PhD in religious studies, and this conversation is far more fascinating. Could we meet again next week?" That breakfast led to several years of relationship, including a podcast we do together called A Christian and a Muslim Walk into a Studio. We occasionally fight like cats and dogs over our different views, but I would give the shirt off my back to him or his family, and I know without question he would do the same for me. I now have a better understanding of Islamic culture. How could I not? I began to spend consistent time with someone different. As our journey has progressed, I have a better understanding of his frustrations and what he's risked in living here.
I love what you said. I understand. Because you spend time with him, you're growing to understand him. People often won't pursue relationship without that understanding, but the only way to get it is to risk having the relationship.
And neither one of you had to sacrifice your passion or your beliefs. You didn't have to be less Christian or he less Muslim. We can still hold passionate views while we work toward a system where we share space with people who disagree with us. I grew up in a very religious, conservative environment with the understanding that we had everything right. Certain people were marginalized simply because they didn't fit our version of what was right and true. They weren't part of the home team. My eyes were opened when I volunteered in the public school where our children attended. I was forced to engage with those who didn't share my views. To my surprise, I found them to be likable and sincere. That changed me. I began to see that I had reached conclusions based on a very narrow set of parameters. I discovered people who came to conclusions different from mine, based on their unique experiences and circumstances. I realized that my narrow view wasn't always best, or theirs always wrong. Unfortunately, the narrow scope of our experience is often exploited to force others out of the conversation, instead of expanding it to include them.
When we seek out relationships with those who aren't like us, our heart and mind begin to change. Proximity is the key, both for learning that language and reaping the benefits of it. So many are afraid of knowledge, of stepping into relationship with someone unlike themselves. Those steps can change us and the world around us.
Respect doesn't demand agreement. Today, disagreements make us enemies, and we advance our goals by mocking or exaggerating what others think. This is about more than the words we use. It's in our demeanor and how we treat others. If our conversation begins with the thought that I'm right and you're wrong, we won't get far.
It's true that the language of healing is based on mutual respect, but a fixed mindset demands agreement and is threatened by any disagreement. In a recent book discussion I hosted, most there were of the belief that respect needs to be earned. I happen to believe that respect also has to be given, simply due to our common humanity. Since God created you, you get my respect.
Aren't we talking about different uses of the word? There's a respect that someone's character deserves, and there's a respect that their humanity invites. Agreement isn't necessary, but respect is not optional. I may not agree with your views, but I can respect your freedom to hold them. In negotiations I've led, people enter the room ready for confrontation with their political ire up. They often are marshaling their arguments, fearful of the other side, and blinded by their stereotypical views of them. After a brief training on our civic compact to create an environment that offers justice and freedom for all, the dialogue changes dramatically. Instead of fighting for their way, they start looking for that common ground that allows both sides to get what they need. Your conscience may be informed differently than mine. What's important to me may not be for you. I may disagree, but I want you to have the same freedom of conscience that I want for myself. Our most difficult issues can only be navigated when we show genuine respect for points of view different than our own.
We're inviting people away from the fringes of imagined superiority, back to the middle, where shared values cross diverse lines. Those who have made it their life's work to be on the fringe and grab society's power for themselves, white supremacists or Antifa, will show zero interest in learning the language of healing. Those who demand that all African Americans go back to Africa, Muslims to their original homelands, or gays and lesbians back to their closets, will find themselves uninterested or unable to change. This is a beckoning call for the vast majority in the middle to come to the fore.
Even in our opposing views, we have enough to get started if we're willing to face one another with honesty. Often we are combating those with fixed mindsets who think they have all the facts when, in reality, they may not. We must address the thinking that says it's okay to fight forever as long as we're on the right side. You won't have the capacity to listen to others and learn from them if you're not growth-minded.
Much of our conflict is based on stereotypes, exaggerations, and caricatures intended to be dismissive of someone else's point of view. Both sides are guilty of comparing their best intentions with the worst examples of the other side. It's easy to get caught up in the rhetoric without realizing how much of it is fabricated and unfair.
Truth becomes difficult to locate in those stereotypical exaggerations and far easier to find when informed by relationships with people who are different. You can't expect the media, your political party, or an advocate to give you an honest view of another person's perspective. Consciously relating to different people becomes the only way to debunk stereotypical thought and find out what others really think. Rarely do we find people who are willing to operate in close enough proximity to find out what's true.
When people are brought together with a common goal of consensus, those who hold false conclusions often find themselves both challenged and changed. As they simply get to know people on the other side, they don't find them nearly so narrow-minded or one-sided as they were led to believe.
That's why we have to ask what's true and not just blindly believe what we've been told. I can be persuasive with people, and I've been cautioned several times to be careful how I lead. You could easily be a cult leader, has been spoken to me on more than one occasion. Some people are led more by personality than by facts. I certainly believe in nuance within a story, and I understand that there are different ways to tell the truth. But at its base, I see truth as an absolute.
Yet even the term absolute truth provokes the culture war conflict between religious people who think they have all the truth they need and others who think in more relative terms. The difference between what's factually true and false is critical. Our culture, however, has lost its shared view of absolute truth, and that can make conversation difficult. The language of healing doesn't require us to hold the same worldviews from which we derive ultimate truth. Even those who believe in absolutes will concede that our discovery of truth is often relative to our own experience. To recognize and embrace what's true is a process that requires growth and patience. In the meantime, we can still build common ground if we champion the liberty of conscience for all.
Compromise or consensus? Are we talking about compromise here? Many people think that's a dirty word when in reality it's often a path to healing. The language of healing requires us to lay down pieces of our agenda for a larger common good.
I actually see a difference between consensus and compromise. Compromise is trading tit for tat until we find a tolerable solution. That may be necessary at times, but when I think of consensus, I envision people putting their best ideas on the table and crafting a different option that both sides can embrace. That process leads to better and far more enduring solutions than those won in compromise. I always press for consensus. I've watched polarized groups walk away from the table with unanimous agreement, both feeling as if the final solution was better than what either of them brought to the meeting. Isn't this the hard work of living in a diverse society?
If it includes everyone. I sit with many from the LGBTQ community who have a legitimate fear of being shunned or rejected outright. I often hear the words, if people find out who I really am. Consensus can't happen until we create a safe place for people who are different. It requires all to be represented at the table.
We each have to consciously make that choice to stretch our capacity for relationship and insight. It will be uncomfortable for many, like it was for me, but well worth the journey. Try this. Crawl. As you stand at your fork in the road, what would most inspire you to learn the language of healing? Walk. Can you think of someone you could invite to learn it with you so you can practice with each other? Run. Schedule a coffee or lunch with one person who is very different from you that you would like to know better.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.